Dr. Jacob Jungers from University of Minnesota, and he'll be talking to us about the effect of nitrogen fertilization and species composition on greenhouse gas mitigation potential in perennial grassland bioenergy cropping systems. So.
Good morning. Thanks for hanging out. My name is Jake Jungers, and I am a postdoc research associate at the University of Minnesota. Today I'm going to tell you a story about an experiment that we did where we measured biomass yields from 9 different locations throughout Minnesota, 12 different species mixture treatments, and look to see what the fossil fuel offsets could be if we turn that biomass into renewable energy, and looked at the carbon sinks below ground in these different species mixture treatments. I'm sure you've all seen this flower diagram before. It's often used to depict the different ecosystem services and crop production potential in managed versus natural landscapes. And recently there's been discussion about managing semi-natural landscapes to provide a suite of ecosystem services as well as some marketable product. So in the experiment that we conducted, we focused on harvestable biomass as this marketable product in the form of crop. And we focused on the greenhouse gas mitigation potential or carbon sequestration as an ecosystem service. So our experiment looked at native perennial grasslands. Some of these were monocultures up to high diversity mixtures. And these grasslands can mitigate greenhouse gases via two different pathways. One is that the above ground biomass that's harvested, produced from these grasslands and harvested, can be turned into renewable energy, which can then offset fossil fuels and prevent CO2 from entering the atmosphere. But these systems also sequester CO2 from the atmosphere and put that carbon into roots, and some of that eventually turns into soil organic carbon as well. So I'm going to go through these two different pathways one at a time and then bring them together at the end. So I just want to outline our research objectives real quick. We were interested in figuring out which mixtures of native perennial plants produce the most biomass. We're also wondering if adding nitrogen fertilizer could increase biomass. And then what are the effects of manipulating species composition and nitrogen on below ground biomass production and carbon sequestration. And then at the end we wanted to figure out what is the relative effect of biomass production and the fossil fuel offsets? What is the relative effect of that on greenhouse gas mitigation compared to the carbon that's stored in roots and the carbon that's stored in the soil? So this experiment was conducted at 9 sites. 8 were in Minnesota and 1 in Fargo, North Dakota. And the sites are in a northern region and a southern region of the state. And in the south, these experiments were established in 2006. Data were collected from 2007 until 2013. And in the north, they were established 1 year later, 2007, and data were collected from 2008 to 2013. And we tested 12 different species mixture treatments, 4 of which were monocultures and of grasses. The top 3 grasses are warm season grasses that are native to the tall grass prairie of this region, and then the Canada Wild Rye is a cool season grass. And then 3 of our mixture treatments included 4 species, all of this coming from the same functional group. So we had 4 species of grasses, the same ones that we grow in monoculture. Four forb species and 4 legume species. So the forbs are non-legume forbs. And then we had combinations of these. So all the species in the grasses and the forb mixtures were combined to produce an 8-species grass forb mix, and so on. And then we had treatment with all the species in these three functional groups, a 12-species mixture, and finally a high-diversity 24-species mixture. So each mixture was grown with and without 60 pounds of N per acre applied annually as urea. And each species mixture, nitrogen fertilization rate combination, was replicated 3 times at each location. So this is a plot layout from one of the 9 locations. So I'm going to jump right into the results here. So this figure shows the average biomass yield for each species mixture, nitrogen rate, treatment combination. And it's average biomass yield accounting for temporal and spatial random variation. So if we focus in on the unfertilized plots, those are the gray bars, we can see that switchgrass and the grass legume combination produced on average the most biomass. And if we look at the plots that received fertilizer, the switchgrass again was one of the higher yielding treatments, along with the grass mix, the 4 species of grasses. So I often get asked, well, was species diversity related to productivity? And this is a famous figure from a dedicated biodiversity experiment, Cedar Creek, which is actually 45 miles north of here. And it shows that within prairie systems with more species, you get more biomass and more renewable energy. But I want to caution audiences that interpretation of our results shouldn't be the same as those experiments. The dedicated biodiversity experiments maintain a certain level of diversity, and they maintain the species within that community. And in our project, we let succession take place. We just manage the systems as a producer might in the field, controlled for problematic invasive perennial weeds, and that was pretty much it. And we never burned our plots. We just removed all the biomass annually at the end of the season. However, we did look to see if there was a relationship between species diversity and yield. And indeed there was. There was a positive relationship between Shannon diversity and biomass yield. However, there was an interaction between that term and year. So through time, that relationship was diminishing. And that's probably because in the monoculture plots, yields started off lower in the beginning of the experiment, and then yields generally increased in the warm season grasses. Whereas if you look at the high diversity trends in yield through time, time's on the x-axis here, those yields were relatively stable. So that probably led to that significant interaction. So this figure shows the change in species diversity in each of our mixture treatments from the start of the experiment to the end of the experiment, and in for all mixtures with and without nitrogen fertilizer. And an interesting point here is that the grass mixtures actually increased in diversity through time. And what we observed was switchgrass was dominant in that mixture early on in the experiment, but as the stand matured, the Indian grass and big blue stem became more abundant, and the switchgrass became slightly less abundant, and the community was more even at the end of the experiment. But what's really interesting about this figure is that the changes in species diversity were the same across the different nitrogen fertilization treatments within any given treatment mixture, species treatment mixture. So a lot of background work has shown that when you fertilize prairies or grasslands, you lose diversity. We didn't see this, and we think that it might be due to the fact that we removed biomass mechanically every fall, and that may have somehow reset the system in the spring in terms of plant competition. So what does this all mean for greenhouse gas mitigation potential? We just sort of quantified crop yield and production, but now we want to talk about carbon sequestration and greenhouse gas mitigation. So we use the subset of sites and treatments to take a closer look at the greenhouse gas mitigation potential. So we focused in on five treatments. One was the switchgrass monoculture, the grass polyculture, the grass legume combination, 12 species and 24 species mixtures at these four locations in Minnesota. So we can think about biomass yields as a vehicle for greenhouse gas mitigation by the way that they offset fossil fuels. So we simply calculated fossil fuel offset credits by multiplying biomass yield by the theoretical ethanol potential, which is calculated by measuring the concentration of the fermentable carbohydrates in the biomass, and then multiplying that by a factor to convert it into CO2 equivalents. So every year we harvest biomass and we can produce some renewable energy theoretically. So in any given species mixture treatment, that offset credit accumulates through time. And this just shows how some of those accumulated. But what we're really interested in is at the end of the experiment, how much greenhouse gas could have been mitigated due to the fossil fuel offsets. However, we know that there are some fossil fuel emissions related to feedstock production and farming of these systems, as well as the conversion of biomass into cellulosic ethanol. So we used data from the GREET life cycle analysis model to quantify some of those components. And here we can see that the largest difference was between the fertilized and unfertilized plots, and that was in the farm inputs component, which includes the production and application of nitrogen fertilizer, which is really expensive in terms of fossil fuels. However, there weren't really any differences across the different species mixture treatments. They were managed similarly. Okay, so what about the below ground carbon storage potential of these systems? We quantified root biomass and looked for a change in soil organic carbon. And I say we looked for a change, but we did not observe any changes in soil organic carbon after 7 years of production in any of our given species mixture treatments with or without fertilizer. And that was looking down to 60 centimeters deep. This figure shows the final soil organic carbon values in our different species mixture, nitrogen fertilization combinations at four different depth increments down to that 60 centimeter depth. And it's not surprising that soil organic carbon varied by depth, but it did not vary across the species mixture treatments and not really across fertilization treatments. So the second sink is the root biomass, and we measured that down to 90 centimeters and split it into three different depth increments. And obviously the soil or the root biomass was greatest in the 0 to 30 centimeter part of the soil. And we did see a significant three-way interaction between the species mixture treatment, nitrogen fertilizer treatment, and depth. And in the case of the switchgrass, which is the darkest bar on the far left, there was less root biomass in the fertilized plots compared to the unfertilized plots. And there were some other differences across species mixtures within those fertilization treatments. Okay, so if we take all of that root biomass, multiply it by the amount of carbon that was in the roots, we can estimate the greenhouse gas mitigation potential of that stock of carbon within the roots at any given time, and that's what this figure shows. So we see the greenhouse gas mitigation potential in the five different species mixture treatments managed with and without nitrogen fertilizer. So now let's start to assemble all of these components to take a look at the whole system. So here we have the really small bars that you can barely see are those fossil fuel emissions related to the production and conversion of biomass to cellulosic ethanol. And then the two large negative bars are show the greenhouse gas that could be mitigated in terms or from fossil fuel offsets and from carbon that's just stored in the roots. So in this figure, you don't see any carbon, soil organic carbon values because it did not change throughout the life of this study. So it wasn't included. And this is the same figure for the fertilized plots. So now you can see the farm inputs. Okay, so if we put all of those together and look at what's the net change or what's the net greenhouse gas mitigation potential, we can compare the five species mixture treatments with and without nitrogen fertilizer. So one thing that we see right off the bat here is that nitrogen fertilizer didn't really improve the greenhouse gas mitigation potential for any given system, and that the systems that had more warm season grasses and typically had a greater greenhouse gas mitigation potential over the lifespan of the study. We also want to highlight that on average, root carbon accounted for up to 43% of this greenhouse gas mitigation potential. And we realize that this is a labile sink and that it's definitely vulnerable to being lost if the system is converted to another land cover type, which is why we wanted to highlight there's a lot of carbon in these roots after 7 years of production, and that it would be beneficial to keep that carbon in below ground into roots, and that hopefully could inform some policy. On average, the greenhouse gas mitigation by switchgrass is about 9.3 metric tons per hectare per year. So I annualize that value. And that's on par with some of the other estimates that have been coming out for the for this feedstock. And then another concluding remark is that we didn't see changes in soil organic carbon after 7 years. In the literature, it really varies. Some studies show changes after 2 or 3 years beneath switchgrass or mixed grass prairies, and some don't show changes even after 10 years of production. And I think a lot of it varies, or is dependent on how much soil organic carbon was there to begin with, that initial value. And I just want to highlight that our soils were quite fertile. These were not marginal lands. So the soil organic carbon levels were relatively high for most of the sites. So I want to acknowledge all of our co-authors, the funding sources, and then these are the citations for where you can find all the details to these studies. All right, I can take some questions.
We do have some time for questions.
So if soil organic carbon didn't change, mm-hmm. and you're assuming that the carbon in the roots is it to be technically mitigating, carbon going into the atmosphere, those roots are going to have to turn into soil organic matter. Otherwise, the majority of it's going to go to CO2 anyway. Mm-hmm. So are you taking that into consideration since you didn't see that change in soil organic carbon? A lot of those roots, as they're being decomposed, if that carbon's now being stored, it's most likely going to CO2.
Yeah. So we didn't measure respiration, but we're assuming that at year after year, as roots turn over, the carbon that must be going into the atmosphere via respiration. However, there is still that stock that's being either maintained or it could be growing. We just measured root biomass after 7 years of production. So it was just 0 and 7 years. And whatever we see here is what that kind of the net sink after all that turnover from year in, all the years in between that time. So, yeah, definitely.
That's a question I have. So it's related to that. So how did you establish those in terms of time zero? When did you sample your soil carbon at time zero? And you already said you did 0 and 7. Was it possible that you created a bit of a debt going in?
That's
and that
what
it was building coming back, and then maybe you're sort of in that range?
We think so, yeah. So previous crop was all an annual crop, either corn, soybeans, or wheat, at all the sites, and they were tilled in the fall. Soil organic carbon was measured in the spring. So there's probably a priming effect during that time, which elevated soil organic carbon. Can't know for sure.
All right, thanks. So please take advantage of